Now, on Friday's News Talk Daily, we left Tara Duggan and Donal Fallon in the snug of the Palace Bar in Dublin city centre. They were talking about Irish pub history and culture. Let's rejoin their conversation.
So we're in a fabulous snug here, don't you? A really great specimen of it. Who needed the privacy?
I suppose there were all kinds of questions around who should be in a pub and who shouldn't be in a pub in the Victorian age. And, you know, Oscar Wilde had a great line about the Victorians, is that they knew the price of everything and the value of nothing. One thing they knew the value of was privacy. So the snug really fit into that idea. So, you know, priests and politicians and policemen and anyone who didn't really want to be seen on a premises had the privacy of the snug. When it comes to women, there's a lot of chatter about women in pubs, sometimes from surprising quarters. Like for the book, I went through suffragette newspapers. The Irish Citizen was the big paper of the Irish Women's Franchise League, and they were horrified at the idea of women going into public houses. The Spirit Grocer, where you could do your shopping, your grocery shopping, and drink on the premises, they were completely against that. And they felt that women were being pulled into this very masculine world. So it wasn't just conservative voices who didn't want women in the pub and who regarded the pub as a men's space. Often liberal women were frightened of the idea that women could be pulled into this rather drunken world. So I suppose it was a way that a woman could be on the premises. And Keogh's is a good example of this. If you look at Keogh's externally, there's two doors. One brings you into the bar and the other brings you straight into the snug. Because that was the grocers. That's where women went to do a little bit of shopping. You could have a drink on the premises, not in view of the customers in the bar. So if it was founded as a place for privacy, I think now it's a great humble brag if you get the snug, isn't it?
Oh, wow.
A good pub. Absolutely. Like, for example, Toner's is a very good snug. There'll be people waiting from the minute they open to get it. And when you're in it, it's prime real estate and you're there for the day. Yeah.
And so when women weren't having to hide, talk us through when it was acceptable and okay for women to actually go in to a bar just and have a pint. Well, maybe not pint, but...
There's a gorgeous picture in the snug here by a photographer and artist called Lee Miller. And if people know Lee Miller's name, it might be because Kate Winslet played her in a great biopic recently called Lee. She was a photographer with Vogue magazine, a brilliant artist in her own right too. She photographed with the American military during the end of the Second World War, so the fall of the last towns in France. Then she was at the liberation of several concentration camps. And in 1946, she gets this commission from Vogue magazine to come to Dublin and photograph James Joyce's Dublin. Now imagine you've come through the horror of the Second World War. This must have been a really nice commission to get. But Lee made her way through pubs that are gone, like the Scotch House, Barney Kiernan's, and she was here in the Palace. And the image that she took of the Palace is completely recognisable. It's the exact same as the bar is today. But in her notes, she described it as the sacred men's only bar, Palace. So 46, this is very much a men's pub. And there's a wonderful illustration of the regulars here called Dublin Culture. You've people in it like the painter Harry Kernoff, Seamus O'Sullivan, Young Cahill or Shannon, and a single woman. In it. The regulars in that artwork are all men. So the 40s and the 50s, pubs like the Palace MacDade's were still places where men of letters went to talk about literature, newspapers, whatever. I think, though, that ignores the fact that in the markets area, you would find women in those pubs. So a very famous Dublin pub now called the Hacienda, where you ring the door and hope for the best, if he lets you in or not, Shay, depending what mood he's in. That was an early house called Corbett's. That was very, very popular in the early 20th century with female market trailers. The fruit and veg market, the fish market were right there, overwhelmingly staffed by women, and they would make their way into the early houses there. So I think in different environments, in market areas, women were definitely drinking in pubs in the 1920s, 30s, 40s, but these kind of so-called literary pubs seem to have been a bit more hostile towards their presence.
And were the women, I'm interested, were they viewed just as working women who were coming in for... refreshment?
Yeah.
Or were they viewed as maybe being a bit fast, maybe being a bit, you know, like as in, you know, I mean, we've had a lot of judgment on women's character. We still do.
Absolutely.
And so I'm interested at that time.
Yeah.
How were they perceived?
Kevin Kearns, great oral historian, did a great book called Dublin Pub Life and Lore. Must be guts of 40 years ago now. He did that book. But people to him recalled these women in the early houses as Shawleys, you know, as hard women, you know, women who were well able to look after themselves. And one guy told Kevin they would often drink the regulars under the table. they were good at it. They were good at those things. So I think in different parts of the city where women were part of that early morning workforce, it was totally normal to see a woman in a pub. Later on, I mean, Edna O'Brien has a lovely memoir called The Country Girl. And she writes about, I think she briefly was dating a barman from the palace. But she talked about this pub and how gradually women were starting to make their way into these kind of spaces. My late friend Tommy Smith, the proprietor of Grogan's, co-proprietor of Grogan's and St. William Street, when him and Paddy took over that pub, they were adamant that there would be full equality upstairs, how they were treated, that the women would be served pints in the same basis as the men, women wouldn't be expected to sit in the lounge and not the bar. He felt it was important that when you were on the premises, every customer was treated in the same manner.
And as women maybe gravitated towards some pubs, people from outside of Dublin, from certain counties, will gravitate to some pubs. Talk to me about county pubs.
I mean, the first thing you see when you walk into the palace on the left-hand side is the Tipperary Association plaque on the wall. My grandmother was from Rosinver and her husband was from Rooski, so Roscommon, Leitrim territory. They drank in the Halfpenny Bridge Inn, which was colloquially known in Dublin as the Leitrim Embassy. So there's always been this tradition of people from wherever they may be in the country gravitating towards a pub owned by a publican from their own place. Even in London, that was true. The El Shillelagh in London was very much considered a Roscommon pub. When you walk into it today, you still see the Roscommon GAA colours on the wall. So that's the migrant experience, isn't it? Whether you'd come from the west of Ireland to Dublin or whether you'd gone to London, I think about the Oxford Arms in Camden Town with the mural of the Mayo GAA crest on the side of it even now. People gravitate towards their own.
We're lucky enough to be today in a wonderfully historic pub, but a lot of them are gone. And what have we lost by using them?
We've lost some extraordinary places. The Irish House on Mud Quay, just a stunningly beautiful pub. It was decorated with round towers and the figures of Henry Grattan and Daniel O'Connell, the Maid of Erin and her stringless hat, knocked down for the Mud Quay civic offices. We've lost places like Barney Kernan's. Barney Kernan's appears in the pages of Ulysses. That's where poor Leopold Bloom encounters the citizen and Barney Kiernan's. It's a slowly rotting ruin just off Capel Street. So every 16th of June you see people in their straw boaters outside Davy Burns, but no one talks about Barney Kiernan's. You know, so we've lost a lot of very important historic pubs across the city. The Embankment in the foothills of Dublin Mountains in Talla, you know, a pub that was vitally important in the ballad boom years. I feel where we're really seeing folks close in Dublin is suburbia. In the city centre, you're not seeing it so much, but the dwindling number of pubs in the suburbs is quite staggering. I think about somewhere like Carmarthen, quite a large suburb of Carmarthen. The Silver Granite pub, enormous pub from that wave of suburban boozers. It's due to be levelled for a carpent. So when they were planning suburbs in the 30s and the 50s and the 70s, there was always a sense that the pub would be an important part of that community. And now we're looking at pretty sizable suburbs that might have one pub or perhaps no pub at all.
But we're changing and society's changing. We're not drinking in the same way that we used to. And, you know, that's a good thing, arguably. Of course it is. You know, you were talking earlier about the worry and concern about men in pubs and how much of their wages were going behind the bar and how much of them were going home. So nobody's arguing with that. But also, for example, since COVID, people are working remotely more. They're not in Dublin, for example, or Cork or Limerick City, maybe on a Friday night or a Thursday night. The whole landscape for pubs is changed.
For me, one of the great moments researching the book was visiting the Wren's Nest pub in the Strawberry Beds. And I went out on a Sunday lunchtime. I opened the door and the pub was packed. There was maybe 20 or 30 women sitting around. And what they were was a group who began meeting during the pandemic outside. And they would gather every Sunday morning and they'd have tea and coffee and cakes together. And they continued to meet up, this ladies group, every Sunday in the Wren's Nest. And what's on the table? Tea and coffee and cakes. So pubs can provide other things. I was there last night at a traditional music session in the Wren's Nest. It's quite an isolated pub geographically. You kind of have to drive there. So you get a taxi, you drive. And lots of musicians are quite happy to be in that company playing music, pots of tea on the table. So pubs do offer more than just alcohol. and the traditional music session, but you can also host a book club, you can host the men's shed, the women's shed, you know, people gather to watch sporting events. There's a whole host of things beyond just drink that happens in the public house. What I wasn't really aware of, and it makes sense when you think about it, theatre.
Yeah.
Right across the city, there are great examples of this.
Went out my way, Clontarf.
Yes.
The sheds,
the Viking Theatre, yeah. Above it. I mean, that's thriving, that theatre. It's a great space, and that's an example of a multi-purpose public. Great bar, by the way. Really fantastic bar. But the way the Viking Theatre above it is an integral part of the community in its own right. I think about the Piper's Corner on Marlborough Street. That pub, to me, is the most important, or at least on par with the Cobblestone, from the traditional music. You will hear Sean McKeown, Dana Dempsey's Piper, is often playing there. I mean, just top quality music. And people go there and they listen to music. And they might have a 0.0 or a coffee or whatever. And there's no one's forcing alcohol on people in those environments. And I think the rise of 0.0 beers, and they're getting better all the time, is a good thing. And I don't think anyone's drinking should be threatened by someone else not drinking. I really dislike that in Ireland, actually, that there can be a bit of, you know, Mickey taking on people, having a 0.0 or whatever. No one's forcing you to have one, you know. I think it's great now that we're seeing better options behind the bar for people who don't want to drink.
Talk to me a little, Donal, about the lore that goes around with pubs, not just in Dublin. Obviously, we've spoken a lot about Dublin pubs, but across the country as well.
Yeah, well, I should say, I mean, I think at the outset, I wanted to write a book about the Irish pub.
Yeah.
And I envisioned this as running from Cadder O'Donnell's in Derry all the way down to the pubs of Castle Island and Knocknagoshal. But it dawned on me that I don't drive, right? So that was an immediate hindrance. And the wife said, I'm not ferrying you around the country, so you can drink in all these great pubs. So I had to narrow it. But I think for historians or sociologists or anyone, it's good to have focus within a relatively tight geographic space. So Dublin became the center of a study. The lore around pubs is extraordinary. There's great stories that are told, sometimes several pubs, the same stories told. An example of that would be Alan Devlin, fantastic actor, great stage actor. Alan, it was said, stormed off stage in the Gaiety Theatre. The exact words he used were alleged to be, F this for the Game of Soldiers, I'm going home, and that he makes his way from the theatre, out the back door, into Neary's, orders a pint, still wearing a headset, and that everyone in the crowd hears this entire exchange. It's a great story. If it sounds too good to be true, it's half true. He walks through the crowd, and this is from Terry Lawler, who was on stage with him. He goes through the crowd, he goes out the front door, he goes into Sinnott's, and while he is still talking, only the sound man hears him in the canvas. The crowd didn't hear him. So it happened. Alan Devlin stormed off stage, he went for a pint, but he went to Sinnott's and not Neary's. Sit in Neary's long enough, and five people will tell you that story. And there are people who claim they were there when he came in the door. So it's classic pub lore. William Butler Yeats is another one. It's said that Yeats had never been in a pub. He said to his friend Oliver Gogarty, bring me to a pub, I want to see what a pub is all about. Gogarty is alleged to have brought him to Mulligan's. He had a sherry or something and said, I've seen enough, take me home. Did a little bit of digging on that story. It was a poet, Fred Higgins, who brought Yeats to the pub. And if Con Hoolan was correct, and he often was correct, Con places that story in Mulligan's, that Fred Higgins brought Yeats to Mulligan's. So if you go into Toner's, the Snug, it's an amazing hub. It's a timepiece museum of a pub. The Snug is given over now to this hunt that probably never happened, or didn't happen there anyway.
Just a personal gripe, and maybe you're not the man to answer this, but why are the women's toilets in clubs always either up the top of two flights of stairs or down the bottom of two flights of stairs?
Because they didn't have them. And I think about great pubs. I remember being in Lockies and Dunleary once, and the wife had to go for a wee, and that involved going right up through the old living quarters. For the family. I think they've got women's toilets now. But it was not uncommon that you would have to traverse through the publican's house to use the bathroom. And for some pubs, when there was a battle around certain women in the 70s and the 80s, barmen would often say, can't serve you, ladies, because we don't have a toilet for you. You'll have to go somewhere else. Elizabeth Taylor, famously, went to Cusack's pub in the Knot Wall there, and they had to allow her to use the gents. So,
There's many a woman has probably the most famous
hiss in Irish pub history was Elizabeth Taylor in Cusack's bar. Richard was filming the spy who came in from the cold. They'd taken up a residency in the Gresham, but she was allowed to use the gents' toilets and fuses.
She won't be the first woman, and she certainly won't be the last to use the gents in in a pub. How important is something like maybe recognition by UNESCO?
Gary, and one of the problems you see when we're talking about the crisis in pub lands, people talk about VAT reductions and campaigning for that. The problem is, I think what you need is very targeted and localized approaches to the crisis. So a VAT reduction would be very, very important for the local pubs in Rooski and Knockinagoshal and everywhere else. But it will also apply to the Temple Bar, you know? So it's a hard sell to the public when they see how well some public houses are doing. I think what you need is specific grants towards local pubs to offer them, for example, financial supports to do something like the Viking Theatre. Now, to take the space that they have and look at what they can, how they can increase their offering. So we were able to do that during the pandemic. You know, we were able to introduce great supports for our artists and for our cultural spaces. I think we need to see the pub as a cultural space, and we need to have very targeted investment on a localized level. No one knows better than publicans what pubs need, and on a case-by-case basis, we need to look at the kind of supports we can offer them to keep these community hubs open. I think one thing we don't talk enough about in this country is loneliness, which is a very real thing in rural Ireland, and social isolation. And the pub is a place where people gather together. It's a really important part of people's lives. And when a village loses the last of its public houses, I think there's a great sadness in that loss for a place. So yeah, on a very localised level, I think we need to look. It's not a question for government. It's probably a question for county councils. We need to look at what localised supports we can introduce.
There is resilience there in the industry, though, as well. You know, they've survived religious control. They survived political suspicion. Economic collapse.
The temperance movements.
The COVID pandemic, as you mentioned, and indeed people's changing habits. Mm. What gives you confidence that we'll survive this too?
That's a great question. I feel there's a moment now, I feel there's a recognition of the crisis that we're in. And as the great philosopher Johnny Mitchell said, you don't know what you've got till it's gone. And I have a feeling that that's happened across Irish society. I think we've reached a point where people are sitting up and paying a little bit more attention now. So I think we're seeing the rebirth of cooperative pubs, which is extraordinary. And there was a wave of them a long time ago, but that seems to be happening now again, where in rural villages, people are coming together and saying, well, the last pub is gone. Why don't we bring it back? You know, why don't we run that pub democratically on a local basis through a committee? So the collectivization of the rural pub is a really interesting phenomenon. And I think there's maybe a half dozen examples of that around the country in recent times. I think we'll see a lot more of that. I think if pubs are closing in a village, villagers will come together and put new life into them.
Donal Fallon, thanks so much for joining us on News Talk Daily.
That's it from today's News Talk Daily. If you missed any episode over Christmas, you can catch up on the Go Loud player or wherever you get your podcasts.